Hello, everyone, and welcome to A Little Wiser. This is your host, Kimmy Culp, and joining me is producer Erica Gerard. Hey, Erica.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good, but I want to set the stage and the record on something.
Okay.
So many people, listeners I've ever met and friends are like, so what studio do you record at in LA? Where are your studios? As if I have some like fancy studios. And right now, like everyone else during COVID, we have decided to sell our house and I am at my parents' vacant apartment recording in a closet. And because there's no furniture or clothes, I have a blanket over my head to prevent the echo from going off all the walls. So I'm in a vacant apartment with a blanket over my head.
I love it. I think that means you're a real true blue journalist.
Yeah.
Ugh. Okay. When you record with a blanket.
Yes. Totally. So Erica, fascinating episode last week.
Oh, I know. So good.
Do you just want to quickly high level tell everyone who it was?
Yes. So we had the opportunity to speak with formerly known as Juan Pablo Escobar, now known as Sebastian Marroquin, who is the son of infamous kingpin and drug lord Pablo Escobar.
It was like he does not, he's not sort of readily available for interviews. I think he's pretty selective and cautious. So it took months and months of emailing and phone calls. And when he like emailed that he was in, I was like, oh my gosh. Cause I, as you know, I'm a huge Narcos fan. And anyways, I'm so grateful in his trust in doing the interview. And I just learned so much about him. And really the takeaway for me was our generational stories and how often, and that they do really live on, right? I mean, he never committed a crime in his life, but he says at the age of 6, he lived the life of a criminal. No violent act in his life because that was his legacy. That was his father's story. And how much his story today still identifies him, even though he's a completely independent, unique human being who, you know, was never a man of violence or drugs. So I think he's really, really, he was incredibly, I found him to be a deeply optimistic person, a deeply peaceful man, very much committed to his son and that this would never be his son's story. His son would get to write his own story. And so I think I connected with him surprisingly as a parent and also had like, I just found this empathy for being so deeply misunderstood because of your upbringing.
Yeah.
And that in there was this tender, dear man. And I'm not sure I expected that, but I very much found that.
Oh, yes, I agree. That is, you said it exactly right. I found him to be so tender and kind and humble. I didn't expect him to be that way. And he kept saying over and over again, you know, just how grateful he was throughout his life and finding those moments where he could really learn from his father and learn what not to become and what not to do and how to be the type of man that he could respect.
Well, even changing his identity, leaving the country, he picked his name out of a phone book and really their identities had to be hidden. I mean, there was people in the world who wanted to kill them and would have.
Yes.
And he gets discovered, his true identity, right? He spent a decade trying to protect his mother, his family. And then he says, you know, and ultimately it was a gift because he was set free, right? He didn't have to hide anymore who he was. So like every time something like that happens in the story, like Narcos happens, the whole world, you know, again, hones in on him and his father and his story. And like each time he finds a silver lining that it allowed him, you know, to have a bigger platform to talk about peace or, you know, having his identity allowed him to step out of secrecy. And he just, I think if you haven't listened, obviously it's a fascinating subject in life, but also a really dear man, surprisingly just dear, dear, tender man.
Now, let me ask you, because you're a big fan of the show, I actually have never seen Narcos. Mm-hmm. So, but I've watched, I'm a big fan of Queen of the South, which is also about
And we should say he's not a big fan of the show.
Oh, of Narcos. Yeah, no. He is not a big fan of Narcos. But as someone who is a fan of Narcos, a.k.a. you,
yeah.
What were the differences that you took away from the interview from being just a casual viewer of the show?
Well, I think they showed Pablo Escobar is the contradiction that he was, someone who deeply, deeply loved his family. And that's hard to sever out, right? This man is responsible for 3,000 deaths and 80% of the drugs in the world. And I guess you can't measure how many people that killed. But he deeply loved his kids. And you talk to Sebastian and he says he felt deeply loved and had a present father who gave him great guidance, you know, to be a good man in the world. So that was seen in the show. But then when you hear him talk about it, it's just kind of fascinating. But, you know, what he highlighted for me, which they made Pablo Escobar's life seem incredibly sexy and slick. And in the interview, you know, he talks about being blindfolded and moved to safe houses in the middle of the forest where they have millions of dollars but no access to food and they're not allowed to speak because the DEA is circling. And that is not sexy or glamorous. That is traumatic and terrifying. So that was really – I didn't know that until I heard that in the interview.
Yeah, that was so interesting. And I thought that really one of the moments that stuck out to me was him saying that, you know, Narcos really portrayed his father as a, you know, sexy, glamorous, successful man. And that's the problem with – shows that glorify gangsters and bad, violent people is young people then think that it's super cool and they want to be like that. And that is like a cool way to be successful in the world. But Sebastian was like, no, that is not. He is the least successful person in his perspective because he died and he couldn't even enjoy his fortune.
Yeah.
So he was 44 years old when he died and he missed all the important moments in his family.
Yeah.
So that is not a success.
Yes, correct. All right, speaking of the next generation, you have done your homework on where we are today with drug cartels, which I don't really know. Cartel Land, by the way, everyone watch Cartel Land. It's a documentary my friend Tom Yellen made about drug cartels in Mexico. It is fascinating. It was nominated for an Academy Award, and it is...
Yeah, I've heard that it's incredible. I haven't seen it yet, but thank you for the reminder.
So, Erica, share with our listeners what you learned.
Yes, well, so, you know, in terms of drug cartels, Pablo Escobar's was really the one that reigned supreme in the 70s and 80s. It was the Medellin cartel. And then after Pablo Escobar was killed slash died slash committed suicide, we don't really know. The Sinaloa cartel has really kind of taken over as the most powerful cartel in the world. And the Sinaloa cartel, Mexican drug cartel, the kingpin of the Sinaloa cartel was famously has been arrested several times and has escaped prison several times. His name is El Chapo. You may have heard of him. Have you heard of El Chapo?
Yes.
Okay. So El Chapo is still currently in prison, but the Sinaloa cartel is stronger than ever. And what's really scary about the Mexican drug cartels in this day and age is that they just really have seemed to break all the old rules against killing children and families and attacking foreigners. That no longer appears to be a priority or a concern. And the reason for that is because of the Well, there's many reasons. One is the weak law enforcement in Mexico. And sadly, you know, there just really is no good solution. President López Obrador, who's the president of Mexico, has been in power for a couple of years now, and he has decided to take a radically different approach than his predecessors, who started this kind of war on the drug cartels in around 2006. But he has kind of rejected this militarized war on the cartels approach. And his approach instead has been to try and create more opportunity in Mexico for young people and people who are trying to get out of a violent life of crime, and helping them find work. And it's a great idea in theory.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. But so in application, it doesn't work.
Well, it hasn't really worked. And a lot of critics will say that it hasn't really worked because violence is at an all-time high. Deaths are at an all-time high. You may remember the story last year, and this just tripped me out. Do you remember hearing about the Mormon family, the American Mormon family?
No, tell me what happened.
Well, it's been about a year now. And this Mormon family living in northern Mexico, they're in a community of Latter-day Saints, were just violently murdered by one of the Mexican cartels. It was a mom, a dad, and many, many children. I believe 9 in total were slaughtered. And it was just – it sent shockwaves around the world. It was just horrifying.
Yeah, and it in cartel land, you see that the access they had, and the body bags, and the funerals, and the law, you know, families wiped out, and as you said, kids. And you know, I do know, you know, in my research about Pablo Escobar and that decade and era, as you said, it was kids were off limits. I mean, in some, you know, in a weird way, he was Robin Hood, right? He was going in and almost doing what the president's talking about, you know, building soccer fields and creating businesses and like building homes. And you see the opposite in Mexico with the cartels currently. They're not going into the poor neighborhoods and building soccer fields with the, you know, gazillions of dollars they're making on drugs. They're murdering, you know, murdering people and children and elderly people. So it is just kind of devastating. And I don't know what the path out or the path forward is. Do you have any sense on your research?
Well, ultimately, and this is kind of big picture path out, but you'll find a lot of, you know, journalists or even just, I actually read one cab driver in Mexico City who said, and that I found this to be so poignant. He said, "Americans are always blaming us for drug trafficking, but they always fail to mention that Mexico wouldn't be drug trafficking if they didn't have a giant pool of addicts in their country."
That's pretty fascinating. True. Sadly. Right. That's what I was going to ask too. So where are the drugs going? I mean, did you get any sense about how much are coming to America?
Oh, tons. I mean, that we are
Is it mainly cocaine or is it everything?
No, it's cocaine. It's fentanyl, surprisingly. It's fentanyl, it's amphetamines. And during the coronavirus, it has only gotten worse. The demand is higher than it's ever been, sadly.
I know. I when we were doing coronavirus episodes, I wanted to do one on people in recovery and addiction because I think it's a scary time for people in that space. So it doesn't surprise me that the demand is up.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Erica, for all of that information. It's the first time you're sharing it with me, and I just find it really interesting and sad all at once.
Yeah, no problem. I wish I had better answers or solutions.
Yes. I do too. The world does too.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening. And if you have not listened to Sebastian's interview, I suggest you immediately listen, because he really is just has so many stories to share that will make your jaw drop.
I just wanted to say thank you to Christian Kupsch, who sent us an email and provided some feedback on these A Little Wiser episodes. And, you know, thank you so much for letting us know what you're liking and what we could do better. And if you have some ideas for us too, please give us a shout. Our email is hello@allthewiserpodcast.com, or you can always find us on social media at All The Wiser Podcast. And we would really, really appreciate it if you just shared an episode with your best friend. Any of our episodes, your favorite episode of All the Wiser, and let them know what it meant to you and why you're sharing it. We think it's a great time to inspire others with a little jolt of hope and positivity, and that would be a great favor to us if you could continue to spread the word.
Yes, thank you. Amen and well said. All right, everybody, enjoy your day. And if you have not listened to last week's episode, now is the time.
Have a great week, everyone. Talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.